FM Talk 106.5 hosts the mayoral debate live with Sean Sullivan and your candidates, preparing you for the August 26th vote. The mayoral debate from the Business Expo is a special presentation of Midday Mobile. The mayoral debate now with the candidates from the Arthur R. Outlaw Convention Center. Here's Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And welcome, and welcome to the Business Expo and our Mobile mayoral event. It's great to see everybody out here. As I made my way in today, I saw a lot of people looking at exhibits for the vendors here. At the same time, they were asking questions about Mobile politics, and it's a good thing. And I'm glad we're out here, and it's a good thing to have the person who puts it on. I mean, I have to say thank you to Chairman and CEO of the Mobile Chamber, Bradley Byrne, for having us out. Thank you.
Well, thank you for coming. You're a big part of this exhibit every year. We love having you. Love having you doing your show here. We have 212 exhibitors this year, Sean, the most ever.
That's what I'm saying. It seemed, I could say it, number one, because I think I had to park in Midtown to get here. but I mean, it's a big turnout.
Yeah. No, we're very pleased. We're open till 3, so people will come out.
Okay. Tell me, like, somebody comes out here, who are they seeing? Who are these vendors?
We've got some of everything. We've got some food vendors. We've got people that do work at your house. We've got people that will sell your house.
Yeah.
Literally, we have a little bit of everything.
All right, so open till 3 today.
3 today. Yes, come and bring your business card. We have drawings.
There we go. Drop your business card in and win. And come on in, too, because we're going to be doing this for the next 2 hours from now until 2 o'clock. Your chance to hear from the Mobile mayoral candidates. And I want to get this started and introduce the Mobile mayoral candidates and give them a chance to say hello to y'all within 2 weeks now of Election Day. We start off with the order. The order I created here was when the people declared they were running for the mayor's race. So this is my formula on this. I've explained my formula here. So we will open up with the person first to declare, Mobile mayoral candidate, Commissioner Connie Hudson. Yeah, it's you. It's you. So it's your opening statements here.
Okay. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Can everybody hear me?
They got you.
Okay. Thank you, Sean, and 106.5 for this opportunity. I am here today. I am running for mayor of Mobile because I love our city, and I am determined to do everything within my power to make sure that Mobile lives up to its greatest potential. No one will work harder than I will to help Mobile address its challenges of keeping families safe, of addressing blight and infrastructure issues, addressing mental health and homelessness, addressing public transportation and attainable and affordable housing, but also keeping Mobile's economy strong and creating job opportunities and opportunities for small businesses to succeed. To make Mobile, my goal is to make Mobile the best quality of life that we can offer all of our citizens. And to do that, we have to address those challenges, starting with public safety. You're going to have to let me know when my minute's up.
Yeah, we're real close on it, but we got
okay.
You. We appreciate that. Next person to declare and our next Mobile mayoral candidate to hear opening statements from, Spiro Chirigadas.
Thank you, Sean. My name is Spiro Chirigadas, and as a man of faith, I'm committed to telling you the truth. As a man of faith, I'm committed to loving my neighbor no matter who they are. As a man of faith, I'm committed to doing the right thing no matter what the political cost is. Y'all, when I look at Mobile, Mobile is going places. When I talk to developers and business people, the secret of Mobile is out. And people want to invest in our community because they see the opportunity that lies ahead of us. They see the momentum of our city, and that's why I'm running for mayor. Because I want to keep that momentum going. I want to bring my budget-minded small business approach to City Hall. Because we got a lot of red tape we need to cut that stands in the way of progress. I want to employ new emerging technologies to solve age-old problems like crime and traffic. I want to bring my experience from the bench and my knowledge from the courtroom because I've seen crime. I know how it grows and festers, and I know how we can fight it. In the end, I'm looking forward to what's next for our city because I believe the future of Mobile is bright. I am all in on seeing Mobile reach its full potential, and on August 26th, I'm asking you to join me and go all in with me.
All right. Thank you, Spiro. Next up here for an opening statement, former police chief of the city of Mobile, Paul Pride.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you, Bradley Byrne, certainly, and the chamber for having us out here today. Listen,
everybody up here are great people, and everybody wants the best for the city of Mobile. Certainly I do. I've invested 27 years as a law enforcement officer on the front line, not as an elected official, but as an employee pushing the mission statement of the city of Mobile. Now that I've worked my way up through the ranks, became the chief of police, we lowered crime, had the best single crime reduction year in 2023 since 1988. Listen, we talk a lot about crime. The reality is we've got to be business friendly. I certainly think the chamber and the current administration has done a lot with economic development and certainly with the growth. But I have a little different vision when it comes to that, right? We can talk about building big buildings, overextending ourselves financially, but we have to deal with the infrastructure needs, the lighting, the homeless issue, transportation, all these issues that really belong to the fundamental role of what government is. I want to work with the chamber. I want to work with the Southwest Chamber. I want to work with the Black Chamber to ensure that we're business friendly and we can keep the momentum going. But saying all of that is for naught if we do not lower crime, if people do not feel like they can work, live, and play in the city of Mobile. We've done it once. We'll do it again. I'm asking for your vote August 26th.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate that. And the fourth position, but we will invert these when we do closing statements, Representative Barbara Drummond.
Sean, I appreciate the opportunity, and I want to thank the chamber. And for me, I am Barbara Drummond, a native of Mobile, and I think it's so poignant that we are having this forum today at a chamber event, because business is the hub by which we now are celebrating all of our bright future that's ahead of us. I am running for mayor for one reason and one reason only. I have helped to plant many of the seeds that you see that we are now celebrating all in business, but it's now time for us to incentivize us. It is time for us to look at crime, look at affordable housing, and to make our neighborhood stronger. It is time for us to build a city that our young people want to say, I want to come back to Mobile, Alabama, because this is the place where opportunities are. So on August the 26th, I want you to look at that ballot and look at Team Drummond, because she has done the work, she is still doing the work, and she wants a city where all is proud of. I am proud of all of the economic things that the chamber is doing, and that's why I am so happy to be here today, because it's an exciting future for Mobile. Brightness is in our future, and I am ready to carry the torch on in the mayor's office. So vote on August the 26th for Barbara Drummond.
Thank you so much. And we are here at the chamber's event, and so therefore I think it would be fitting that the CEO and chairman of the Mobile Chamber ask the first question.
Thank you.
Our candidates.
So for decades now, the Mobile Chamber has provided economic development services to the city and the county. It's been a great partnership. We've announced over 6,000 new jobs in the last 3.5 years. I'm just asking if you're committed to continuing that relationship and having expert professional economic developers of the chamber serve the city.
All right, and the order here is we'll go change at each question. So first up here for this question, Barbara, you're first.
Definitely. I was there when we started the partnership. I remember the time when the chamber, the city, the county all had their own economic development departments as well as the state. And we realized that we could not be strong unless we united together and our collective ability. And I am happy because now we're looking at it as more as a regional approach. So I was there when it started, and that is the secret sauce to Mobile's future. So definitely I will continue it.
All right. Thank you. Paul, you're next.
Absolutely. Listen, we'd be a fool to try to go alone when we've got such professionals, certainly like Mr. Byrne, that's got certainly the federal contacts and all the business and corporation contacts throughout the country. We have to be more than a regional competition. We've got to be competition for the world. And with the Port of Mobile, I certainly think we can do it.
All right. Thank you. Connie, next.
Absolutely. I have been a part of economic development in Mobile for well over 2 decades, working with as part of a team with the chamber, of course. We've got higher education. We've got the Port Authority, the Airport Authority. We've got the utilities. But we all come together. I think that is one thing that has made us so successful in recruiting business and industry, is that we work well together. We hear it from people from industries who are looking for site selections. They tell us us, no other communities don't work as well as you all do together. And so I am committed, have been committed for a long time. Bradley and I have worked together and certainly have been a part of all efforts that the Chamber has initiated for, like I said, almost 24 years now.
Thank you. Spiro.
Would I work with the Chamber? Absolutely. I don't think there's any doubt that Mobile would not be where it is today without the work of the Chamber. And thank you, Congressman Byrne, for leading that charge for us for so long. We need to know what our businesses need, and I think that's a great area where the Chamber comes in and helps the mayor's office, helps the city know where they can step in and help. But I want to go a step further. I want to join with the Chamber, other local stakeholders. I think we need a 20-year economic development plan. I think we need to have long-term goals. Mobile has some old issues. It's an old city. We need to have long-term goals as to where we're driving this city, especially when it comes to redeveloping our waterfront for commercial use for the average citizen, but also how are we going to continue to attract great industry like we have here now.
Thank you, Spiro, and thanks for having us out.
Look, thank you for letting me be here. Thank you for doing this, and candidates, thank you for running.
There he is. And we'll be open, the whole event open until 3 o'clock today. All right, the next question up here, and this on the public safety realm. Big story this week, though. This is a national story. President Trump's called in the National Guard to reinforce the D.C. Police Department in an attempt to reduce crime. At a city level, would you consider calling on state law enforcement, like ALEA, to provide assistance to the Mobile Police Department, as was done in Montgomery? First up, Paul.
Well, of course not. I think that's what leadership's for. If you've got strong leadership at the helm, there's absolutely no reason. If you have a natural disaster or crisis that goes beyond what the resources are locally, then we'll certainly call a lead. But to have the president come in and take over essentially police services is absolutely ridiculous, and that falls on the local leadership. You can rest assured we reduce crime better than it's been done in 38 years. We'll continue to reduce crime, and I can assure Mobilians we will never have to call the president to reduce crime.
Go, Connie.
I would say only in a circumstance that goes beyond what our forces could handle. If we build our police department, if we build it up, and I'm all about increasing the number of law enforcement police officers because we need to get back to community-based policing. But if whatever, you know, I can't foresee what circumstances in the future there might be, but I will never say never on anything. But, you know, we have the National Guard. We have other forces available that can work well with the Mobile Police Department. And I can't envision any opportunity for this to happen. But, you know, I would never say never on anything.
All right. Thank you. Spiro.
I pray I never have to. You know, I certainly think in the middle of a natural disaster where your services are overwhelmed, some level of civil unrest that was just absolutely overwhelming our police department, I can't say that I would in those circumstances, but I pray we don't face those circumstances. And in the end, I respect all of our men and women in uniform. I thank them for their service. Policing is not their primary function. We need to let our police forces and local state partners help us reduce this crime, like our federal partners and ALEA, but I can't see calling in the National Guard to help reduce crime.
All right, thank you, Spiro. Barbara.
I would not, because I think that the Mobile Police Department is probably one of the best in the entire country. I've seen them at work. I know what they can do. I think that we need to ramp up the numbers, but I think that we need to keep leadership locally. I know ALEA. ALEA does a good job, but they have a level of government that they need to take care of. I think that others around the country, as well as here in the state of Alabama, I know it for a fact. They look at our police department. When we've had other issues around the state, they've called our police department. Only this week that I saw the depth and the commitment that our police department and fire department has to doing the tough work. When we had two people that were killed in the manhole and one that is now still in the hospital, I saw a level of commitment that I have never seen before. So I support our police department.
Barbara, thank you. And as we talk about this, many Mobile police officers, you're talking about adding to the Mobile Police Department, but I want to talk about retention. Many Mobile police officers leave MPD for jobs with other police departments or sheriff's offices. What would you do to retain officers that are on staff now you know, how much, you know, would you change the schedule, pay, morale boosting? What would you do to retain the officers we currently have? Connie, you're first.
I think we have to look at all those factors. You know, it comes down to compensation and benefits. I mean, that is number one. And we have to make sure that we're competitive. I know with the county commission, that's what we focused on, making sure that we're competitive, because it's important that we keep our numbers, you know, where they should be as far as what's required for law enforcement to the manpower in the county. Same with the city. So whatever we need to look at, you know, it's difficult to recruit these days, and so we have to make sure that the work environment is, you know, we may offer certain perks, whether it's education opportunities or things like that would or even health care, additional health care benefits. But we have to be attractive, and we're competing with every other community around us, including the county. Mm-hmm. And so definitely that would be high on the list of what we need to do to be attractive.
Thank you. Spiro.
Yeah, I think maintaining competitive pay and benefits is essential. I look at programs that other cities have employed. South Fulton County in Georgia, they really saw that they wanted their officers living in the community they were policing. And so they created a program that was a down payment assistance program to actually help officers buy that first home, buy that home within Mobile, in our case. I really like the sound of that program. I want our officers living here in the city and continuing to provide those education benefits and continuing to fully fund the police and fire pension program. The officers and the firemen and our servicemen need to know that they're going to be compensated for the work they did when it does come to retire.
Thank you. Barbara.
I think that I would look at their benefits package, because I think that that is what we can do to retain them. But I also want to look at something for the future, because we need to rebrand the police department so that those who are out there in the community, we can reseed them to come into those professions. And I'm really happy because the police and pension fund is going to be fully solvent in 2026. That's a good thing for the city of Mobile, but I think that I want to create a pipeline in the educational system so that we can start recruiting in our own city those students who can come back into police and firefighting, and that we can bring back the honor that they will know this is a good profession. But the benefits package, I think, is the number one.
Thank you. Paul.
Of course, this is my wheelhouse, and we've already done it. And I'll be frank with you, in 2021, we had 101 officers left at the police department. That was the largest single year of attrition rate that we had walk out the door in a 12-month period. Within 2 years, under my leadership, we reduced attrition some 48%. That's huge, but the reality is it's actually a part of my strategic plan, and we address three essential things. One, leadership, communication, and fairness and equity within the department. Benefits are a big deal. There are two different premiums for insurance benefits in the rank and file since 2016. That puts a disparity and a division between the rank and file, not only in the police department, but certainly in the fire department. And then we've got to stop dividing our public safety, such as we had with the parity issue between the fire department and the police department. Essentially bringing all these things in, our retirees have not had a raise in some 20 years, okay? And that's very big, because a lot of these men and women look to come here to retire. They're not doing it for the money. They're doing it for the benefits. They're doing it for the stability. And certainly more than everything that I've said, they want leadership that's going to back them. Sometimes even when they're wrong and the incidences are incidental, but they need that strong leadership that says this is a hard job, we're going to back
it. Hey, Paul, thank you. And we're going to have this last question here. It's going to be 30-second answers, just because, well, we have to go to a news break here in just a second. So while we're talking about, there's a lot of talk about community policing, and that falls specifically on patrol officers, right? That's who does this. They're already shorthanded inside MPD. How would you streamline the special units where a lot of these patrol officers go to? How would you put more of those officers back on patrol? First up, Spiro.
I certainly think recruiting more officers is part of that. We do need more officers in our city, certainly downtown, certainly on patrol. You know, we need to look at all of our special units and make sure that they're they're not overstaffed, that they're not overbloated. We have to look for efficiency everywhere in government. We need officers on the street. We need officers in the neighborhoods, building relationships with the citizens, with the business owners, so they feel comfortable calling on them for help. We have a ton of amazing officers in our city. I want to get them some help. I want to see more foot presence in downtown, especially at night. I don't know if we'll talk about some of the incidents lately, but we need more officers visible in our community.
Spirit, thank you. Barbara.
Well, I tend to think that even those that are in special units, all officers, when you work for the city of Mobile, especially when you are in a public servant job, you're serving a need for the city. So that's all a part of community policing. But I think that we need to increase the numbers, and then I think that we need to retool them to think that, because this is their community too. Many of them live here. Their families are here. And so we need to rebrand and retool them to give them the tools that they can represent in those communities.
Thank you, Paul.
Listen, the Mobile Police Department has all the tools they need to do the job. What they need is boots on the ground. We're roughly short 100 to 120 officers. And with a commitment to put them boots on the ground and patrol, then you will stove off a lot of the crime from happening, which then relieves the back pressure and the burden on the investigators. And at some point, if you continue down that trajectory, then you can start moving some of those investigators back to the field.
And Connie.
I believe it will take some reorganization. The special units were mentioned. I think we need to look at the function of those special units. Can those officers, some of them, be reassigned? But it will also take additional police officers that we'll have to hire. And I'm estimating up to 100 police officers to be able to go back and do community-based policing, which is working with intelligence-led. But we have to have police officers visible in our neighborhoods, in our parks, in public spaces, to bring confidence to citizens that public safety is doing its job. You know, I ask people everywhere I go, when was the last time you saw a police cruiser patrolling your neighborhood? And majority cannot remember when the last time was. And I think that building relationships between neighborhoods and the police department and building trust and respect is so very important. And I think it will move the needle in public safety in Mobile.
So y'all do agree that some you would look at it, if elected mayor, the allocation of officers and what they do for MPD?
Yes, and it's called a workload assessment. We do it every 3 years.
Okay. All right, we are going to go to the news here shortly and come back. We are live at the Convention Center for the Mobile Business Expo, but your chance to talk to and hear from the mayoral candidates within 2 weeks of Election Day. And a lot of people still, I know it's shocking, but as I talk to people, a lot of people undecided out there. A lot of people are still, they do not know how they're going to vote on Election Day, so this is a great time. Mind you that we have another hour and a half here, so if you're listening to us right now on the radio, I welcome that, or on the Facebook feed, but you can come here to the Mobile Convention Center and see it go down in person. When we come back, too, we talked about government. I want to talk about the size of government, so be thinking that. That's like the tease going into the news break, the size of government, and is it right? We'll ask that of our candidates when we come back. This is our coverage of the Mobile Mayoral Forum from the Convention Center right here on FM Talk 106.5.
The mayoral debates continue on FM Talk 106.5. Now, live from the Business Expo at the Arthur R. Outlaw Convention Center, here's Sean Sullivan.
And welcome back to the Mobile Mayoral Forum live from the Convention Center. For the next hour and change here, we'll be talking to the four that would like to be the next mayor of Mobile.
Reminder, too, if you're listening on the radio, we appreciate that, or on the live stream or on Facebook. But in addition, you can come here in person at the convention center. I think it's, Bradley Burns say, $5 with your business card. Come on in and be part of it in person. So we talked about public safety, and, of course, that drives a lot of the conversation has so far in this. But I want to also talk about the size of government overall, city government overall. This question here, do you feel the administrative staff for the city of Mobile is the right size, too big, or not big enough? And if you think it's too big, give me an idea of where you would cut. Barbara, you're first.
Well, I've met with the finance director, and I asked for that very same question. He has not given me that number, but as I understand, see, I've been at the city before, mm-hmm. and I cover one area. I had a staff of two of us. I understand there are 10 of us that are now in the communications department. So I would start cutting a lot of those administrative staff members that are appointed.
All right. Thank you. Connie, you're next.
Well, I don't want to threaten anybody's job today, but I would say that there definitely needs to be consolidation. I think it is top heavy as far as administration. I think that certainly can be streamlined. I have some ideas there. But I think that we need a lot more people that are getting the job done as opposed to people that more Indians than chiefs, I guess, right. At this point. And I see the opportunity to make that happen.
All right, Spiro.
I don't think I'm in a position to give a good, honest assessment of that. I want to get in there and see that. And I know some of the people working in the city. I don't think it's fair to think we can run a city with 2,100 employees and a $300 million plus budget on the same staff that we had in 1980 or 1990. I think we need to be efficient as a city. I'm a small businessman. You have to constantly reevaluate if you're being efficient and if you're getting the most bang for your buck. So if the people I'm praying see fit to make me their next mayor, the next 2 months will be assessing and evaluating that very question.
Right, thank you, Paul.
Absolutely. I have a conservative approach when it comes to being top heavy in government. The mayor's administration has grown some almost 100% in the last 4.5, maybe 5 years. And it's not to say that maybe we're going to just go in here and slice jobs, right? But the vast majority of those in the upper level management are making more than $130,000 a year. And my thoughts are is we have to be a good steward of the people's money, and we certainly have to do more with less. And we need to find out who's really doing the job, who's not doing the job, and then make the appropriate cuts. And while that may be hard, that's real leadership.
All right. I appreciate that. Next, we'll talk about some infrastructure items, but this one also about the Mobile Housing Board, because we talk about where folks live and getting people to live in the city of Mobile. And so when you look at the Mobile Housing Board over the last, let's say, decade, just from my perspective, there's been problems with inefficiency, leadership failures. What is your vision for the Housing Board, and how would you ensure that your nominee, who you would nominate to run MHA, implements that vision? First, Paul. There we go. Get your mic up.
You got to have strong leadership. I don't necessarily know what all the internal issues are, but we've gotten rid of all the affordable housing stock, and I'm certainly sure there's a plan with that. But the reality of it is now we've created a problem in the city, and in my opinion, you look at RV Taylor, Thomas James, Happy Hills, Roger Williams. You know, why did we get rid of these places only for these to be green spaces? And so, yeah, there are some internal issues that we have to deal with, but we've got to get back to trying to figure out how are we going to take care of those that are less fortunate.
Yeah, and I'll give you a second more here, but, I mean, you would have the nominee. How would you hold them to account to your vision on that?
Well, so I think the mayor has to give his vision for the entire staff to say, this is the vision, this is where Mobile is going, and how do you complement that? Accountability is the problem that we're lacking in government, and that when we give the directives, we don't do the follow-up. And make no mistake, success is always in the follow-up. It's not in the command.
Thank you, Paul. Spiro.
I think the housing authority has to be connected to our city, right? And I say that because I attended the MHA's back to school bash at 1010 Baltimore Street last week, and talking with William Ray, who's a board member over there. Up until recently, the CFO and COO, Chief Financial Officer and Chief Operating Officer, neither of them lived in Mobile. Neither of them were even in town. They never
toured regularly our housing authority property. We got to make sure that the people who are running our housing authority are very much connected with our city and connected with the needs of our city. So that'll be step one, to make sure that we fill those roles with people who actually live and work here in Mobile.
So that would be your first thing, that they would have to be a resident of Mobile in that position.
Yes.
All right. Barbara.
I want that person first to have compassion for those that live in affordable housing. As aforementioned, we have very little affordable housing in the city of Mobile. So first, I want the person not only to have compassion, but understand the city, because there's a value there. Those are the individuals who will be our workforce. Those are the individuals who will stimulate our educational system. And then the second thing I want this person to do and to commit to is that we will do a master plan for the city of Mobile on affordable housing. There's a lot of blight in our city that I think, going along with our history, that we can go and revitalize many of those neighborhoods that used to have public housing in them that are now blighted, that we can use. So first, I want them to have compassion. I want them to commit to a master plan for the entire city. And then I want them to also commit to working with the city of Mobile on all of the federal dollars that are coming into our community.
Thank you. And Connie.
It definitely boils down to accountability. There has to be a long-term plan, and the Housing Board has to be held accountable for making sure that plan is executed. The Housing Board and the city have to work hand in glove in that respect, because that is the arm that the city uses to conduct those programs, and we need to make sure that they're successful and that they're serving the citizens, the most vulnerable citizens certainly out there, who need and deserve to have these opportunities and services.
Thank you. While we're talking about let's talk about blight. And think about this, coming into the first term for Mayor Stimson, it was discussed many times about the blight in our city. He talked about it back then. Here we sit in 2025, and removing blighted properties is still something we're talking about all these years later. What is a plan for mitigating this? I mean, I don't expect anybody overnight to eliminate all the blighted, but a plan. You talked about it, Barbara, you talked about a master plan, but a plan that would remove, like, we do this, A, B, C, or 1, 2, 3, to get rid of the blight problem for Mobile. Spiro, you're first.
I think public-private partnerships are the best way to maximize public dollars. I'm thrilled that Mobile was awarded the 4 grants from the state of Alabama this year to look at affordable housing. But we want to create markets within our struggling neighborhoods. Most of our struggling neighborhoods are historic neighborhoods. And so you can attack the blight issue through critical repair programs, down payment assistance programs, housing improvement programs, but oftentimes it's such a heavy lift. You have to be able to create an alternate revenue stream, and that's why I do talk about TIF districts, tax incremental financing districts, that create a separate source of funding that goes directly back into the neighborhood you're trying to serve. As that neighborhood continues to grow in value, that money goes directly into a pot that can only be used for that TIF district. So I see it as a crucial way to really fight blight in our community.
All right, thank you. Paul, you're next.
Listen, that's always been a problem. I think currently the administration is sitting over 100 blighted homes right now waiting for a developer to pick them up and build them out. You know, it is said that they're reserved for certain contractors. I couldn't tell you if they are or they're not. But I think the next mayor, and certainly that would be me, I hope, is to be able to streamline that process, even with the properties we already have, to get those properties out there to some developers, get them out there. But listen, we can revitalize any of these neighborhoods. But if we do not control crime in these neighborhoods, all we've done is spend money for absolutely nothing. I'll give you a prime example. We did it over there on what is normally called the Avenue, but certainly Dr. King, it right there at Broad Street. And 30 years ago, we did a revitalization problem, but we never addressed the crime problem. And now you go back to that area, and it is completely ran down, and we did absolutely nothing.
Connie, you're next.
There are 3 tools that I see that the city can use to address blight. One, we have property owners with blighted properties that they're not, the properties are not living up to safety codes. They have to be held accountable to safety codes, and the property owners have to be held responsible for that, and or be penalized. If we have properties that are vacant, dilapidated, and tax delinquent, we don't know who the property owners are, then the city can take quiet title action and gain marketable title of those properties, work with developers in a public-private partnership to turn those into residential properties or commercial and put them back on the city's tax rolls and make them beneficial to the city. The city also has a Department of Neighborhood Revitalization, because there are property owners who would like to make improvements, but they just can't afford it. So then there's some funding, grant funding available to get that, to make that happen, to help those.
All right. Thank you, County. Barbara.
You know, I am probably one of the only few that's actually, Sean, that has helped to start that process with the city of Mobile. I actually got passed in the legislature laws that would help lessen the time that the city can go and deem a property condemned. We just passed the scrap tire law. And I wanted to say that when you look at trying to look at the blighted property, not only do we need an inventory, but we need to look back and look at the process by which small business developers who would go in and develop those neighborhoods and fix those properties up, we need to take away some of the bureaucracy. I have sat down with the Home Builders Association and the development community, and many of them are telling me the process is just too long to be able to get building permits, electrical permits, and plumbing permits. So the bureaucracy, the process has already started. I quite frankly think that Mobile is on a good track as it relates to dealing with the properties. Now we need to start holding those responsible who are causing the blight.
Thank you, Barbara. Well, this will be perfect. This timing into the next question here. It's weekly in doing what I do. I hear complaints from people, whether they're calling in or texting in the radio station or emailing me, about the permitting process for small businesses in Mobile. This is another one that I thought about when Sandy Simpson came in as mayor. Blight and permitting process, these were things we were talking about all those years ago. And I know there's been efforts here, but here in 2025, I hear the same things and the same issues out there. So I'm going to ask y'all, what's wrong? What's wrong? What's happening? Why does this continue to be a problem for the city? And how are you going to fix it? That's the big question. Barbara, you're first.
Well, you know, after meeting with that community, from the developers to the home builders, I think the whole process needs to be just blown up and we start all over again, because their voice is not being heard. That's what I was told, that they don't even have a voice in the process. I had one developer who has bought a beautiful piece of property on Dolphin Street 2 years ago. He still does not have a building permit, and he's dealing with multiple departments and multiple people within the agency. And he says, as soon as I get used to one person, it changes and it goes to another person. So I think that entire process needs to be revamped and reorganized to make it customer friendly to those who are going to be doing the work. We need to take out all of that bureaucracy. It still needs to be safe. They need to meet building codes and all the other codes that are associated. But we need to just do the whole process all over again and give that community a voice into the process.
Thank you, Barbara. Paul, you're next.
Listen, fantastic. And I think Barbara's absolutely right. I know a gentleman here that bought an established restaurant to renovate it, and it took him 2.5 years to get it. But it really depends on the contractor, right? If they're within the current administration's framework or network, they get what they want. It's ironic that we built or committed to building a $300 million facility on the Civic Center, and that permitting process lasted literally for 30 days. I've already committed to the chamber and said that we would put a one-stop shop together. While we know that it's not all done at City Hall, there are some things done with the fire department and the Board of Health. It needs to be a one-stop shop. There's an online system, but there's no reason when a developer or a business person goes to City Hall that they're met with discontent, they're met with employees that cannot give them answers. And I think the follow-up is the key, and that's real leadership, and that's my commitment.
Okay, thank you, Paul. Connie, you're next.
The problem is bureaucracy, too much bureaucracy in the process. It has to be streamlined. We've done it on the county side. We We don't get the same kind of complaints that the city does. And 24 years ago, I started hearing those complaints when I first ran for city council that something needed to be done. The home builders were complaining bitterly about it. And during this process, going back and talking with them again during this campaign, they are still complaining bitterly about it. It is not that difficult. This isn't rocket science. We can fix this. This is a matter of streamlining the process and making sure that you don't have so much bureaucracy that things get lost in the process.
Thank you. And Spiro.
I think we need to cut out the runaround. You know, the truth is a lot of files go to the city and they get lost on someone's desk and they have to travel through multiple departments. And when a builder, a developer, or just a citizen calls, they get the, we don't have it. We don't know where it's at. We need to create a single point of contact. This is something that other cities have done. Call it an ombudsman, call it a concierge. But your file, your building application, your permits need to stay with one person, and that be your point of contact throughout the process. I think we need to look at getting our inspectors the education to make them multidisciplinary. We need to get government running on private business time. It's hard to go set up six different inspections for a business owner. We need one. We need one with fire and one with the city. We can get that. There are a lot of other jurisdictions that do that. That's something that is a realistic goal for me. But having that single point of contact so you're not getting lost on somebody's desk for 3 weeks.
Thank you, Spiro. And I'll just say this. Well, I have one of y'all will be the next mayor of Mobile. I have y'all all listening. Yeah, the question that has come up in discussion on my show over time has just been, why can't you get everybody into one room? And I'm not asking everybody to answer this, but I'm just having y'all here. Get everybody who's in that process in one room and said, where's the breakdown? You know, and I know that's overly simplified, but I've been talking about this for decades here and talking to so many listeners that they are just very, very frustrated. All right, next, about workforce development. We've talked about that some. Do you feel, and not just ask it this way, do you feel the city is doing enough in workforce development? My question is, maybe their energy is there, but it's not focused in the right place, or maybe you think it's focused in the right place because there's opportunities. Heck, we're here. I've had Bradley Byrne on my show many times. He says, you know, we're coming online for 1,100 jobs next year or 1,200. And he said, we're having to fill them with people that aren't from here. And I'm a homer. I want to fill with Mobilians, people from here. So those jobs aren't getting filled with Mobilians. What's happening? Where's the breakdown on this? Barbara, you're first.
Well, I think that there was a breakdown initially. Just like we said, it can't be built overnight. But I think that Mobile now is on the right track. We now have all of those signature academies in our school systems, from Williamson Training, you know, welders for Austell, from BC Rain doing aerospace, to the healthcare industry, and so on and so on. And then we talk about Bishop State, which was one time lacking, but now it's not. You know, I am proud because we built the manufacturing center, and now industry now has respect for the two-year college system. So I think that, and then you look at Excel, which is one of the charter schools, which I helped fund that program. We now are training 18 to 24-year-olds. So I think that what we're doing now is catching up, but I do think that we're on the right track. We're creating those workforce development models to go into the school systems and into the community. So I think if you look at us now in 5 years, you will say we've got it right.
Robert, thank you. Paul, you're next.
I don't think we're on the right track. We've got some great signature schools with Mobile County, and it's not to say that they're not doing a great job. My personal opinion is they work in silos. That means we do not work together. You've often heard me talk about the workforce development program, which is why the $60 million budding steel industry decided to go over there. We talk about workforce development, but the average median income in Alabama is $56,000 a year, and everybody brags about all the jobs that are coming to Mobile, but the reality is $56,000 a year. Think about that. We've got to educate our high schoolers upon graduation to be able to take some of these entry-level jobs, make work upwards of $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 a year. We're not doing it, but I also think that we could do it with the two-year program with Bishop State, just like they're doing it over there in Baldwin County, and that's going to be a win for Mobile.
Paul, thank you. Connie, you're next.
I think we are on the right track. We just need to expand that track. I think there are many opportunities for the city to step forward, working with business and industry on apprenticeships and opportunities for young people, creating pipelines from all the way from middle school, high school, and technical training opportunities. And those are the things that we need to look at doing to give our young people those opportunities. But we, you know, right now we're having to recruit people from outside of the Mobile area to fill these jobs. We've done a great job recruiting business and industry and a lot of jobs, but we don't have enough bodies right now to fill those jobs. So it's continuing to work organically through our pipelines with our high schools and feeding those through the technical training systems, but also recruiting people in and bringing people into Mobile. We need to bring people back.
Thank you. Spiro.
Yeah, a little feedback. Absolutely. I think going forward, workforce development over the next 10 years is the biggest economic development issue we're going to face. We can only attract industry so long as we can fulfill their needs for employees. I would love to see Mobile County invest in a trade academy. You know, we have the modules within our high school that I am very excited about. They're fantastic. Bishop State's doing good things. It's fantastic. We need to expand it, but really where I see the holdup is we need more kids coming through our school system desiring to seek out that education. We need to change the narrative that college is the only pathway to wealth. That's not true. I'm not sure it ever was, but it certainly is not true now. We need to make sure that we're highlighting our industry, the actual wealth and growth opportunities it provides. We need to change the narrative within our school system, with our counselors, with our teachers, and guide more kids to the services we have as we expand them.
Spiro, thank you. Yeah, and just as, once again, having the opportunity to have the four of y'all, one of you will be the next mayor of Mobile here, so me just to go on. If there was any way just to go into school, so I'm thinking back when I was 17 years old, and you talk about the number, you know, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000. If somebody had just walked in and said, hey, and I'll use a technical term here, this is me, it's not the candidates, hey, knuckleheads, you want to make $70,000 a year, you make $80,000 a year, you'd have gotten my attention. Even beyond the training, if you check these boxes and do these things, young people, you're going to make that kind of money. Just talk to them in the language I would understand as a 17-year-old. That's throwing it in the mix. All right. Next in the list here, public transportation. And I'm going to just ask this plainly. Should Mobile even provide public transportation at all? And that answer is yes. Then at what level? And what's your plan to make it efficient? First up, Spiro.
Thank you. You know this is a topic I love. I think we have to provide public transportation. There are many Mobilians that's their only reliable source of transportation, period. 31% of the people not working in our city say it's because they lack reliable transportation. The only way, we can't just throw money at the problem endlessly. That doesn't work. We have to make a system that is both convenient and reliable. The only way public transportation will succeed is if it's an option for everybody, whether they have their own car or not. That's why I look at trolleys. I've drawn out a map with highlighter and routes, something that will be fun, convenient, something that you don't have to wait an hour and a half in the sun waiting on your bus to hopefully come, something that you know if you walk out to any of our main thoroughfares, within the next 20 to 30 minutes, a trolley is going to pass by heading in the direction you're going. We can do that. We can make that a reality in Mobile, and I hope after my administration, should I be lucky enough to have one, people will not think about Mobile without thinking of our public transportation.
Spiro, thank you. Barbara, you are next.
I think that public transportation is definitely a must in any city because it not only defines the city, we need to change our attitude not only for the workforce, but also for Mobile as a historic city. And once we build this history to become an ecotourism, we need to have transportation for those folks to get to the various points. I think that we need to relook at who we give our dollars to, whoever that third party is, to make sure that they're meeting all of the criteria that we need for public transportation. Right now, we only think forward for the workforce, but I think it needs to be viable for the city as a whole.
Thank you. Paul.
I think transportation is definitely needed, certainly for the underprivileged, underserved in Mobile, even though most people in Mobile, I think, have a vehicle. But You know, when it comes to the downtown and certainly when it comes to the historic district, trolleys are great, right? But it doesn't address the whole problem within the entire city. And we know from last year, because of the situation, that we gave $10 million to the WAVE system only to receive $1.25 million back. I think we can scale that back a little bit, certainly, and try to find a way for the private market to come in and fulfill some of this. That's just one example, but you could use Uber, Lyft, or maybe even allow some of these drivers with the WAVE system to open their own transportation business. But I think it's a must to kind of reevaluate where we're at. And I'm also not opposed to going out to places like Disney World, Orlando, people that have the expertise to move large amounts of people in the most efficient way. And I'm dedicated to doing that.
Well, thank you, Connie.
I think we definitely need public transportation, and we need to make it accessible. The first thing we need to do is to develop a long-term, comprehensive, cost-efficient plan to go forward to address the needs of the community. And that's going to include a combination of different types of transportation services, whether it's fixed route with the big buses on the high demand areas, make those more frequent, with the lower demand areas, smaller vehicles, even micro transit ride share, you know, which is an on-demand service. So I see a combination of all these different types of transportation that we will make work for the community, but we have to make it accessible for the people who need it.
Okay, thank you very much. So we're going to head to the news here, but we're coming back next hour, another hour of your questions, because I have many questions from the listeners that have been emailed into me. We'll mix those in hour number two of our mayoral event right here at the Mobile Convention Center during the Business Expo with FM Talk 106.5. We'll be back.
FM Talk 106.5 continues with a 2025 mayoral debate from the Business Expo with each of your candidates. Once again, here's Sean Sullivan, live from the Arthur R. Outlaw Convention Center.
All right, and welcome back. Yeah, we are here at the Convention Center during the Chamber of Commerce's Business Expo, and this is going on until 3 o'clock today. We are going to be part of it here until 3, but we'll be talking to the candidates for just a little bit more. But a reminder, yeah, until 3 o'clock today, $5 with your business card to get in. And appreciate the people chiming in on social media. You can watch this feed if you want to watch it from Facebook. You can go to facebook.com/FMTalk1065. Of course, here on the radio and, like I said, in person right here at the Convention Center. So here we go. And more questions. I will say this, that one of the things that came up, I saw that people were posting up about the WAVE, and we just threw this out, is maybe infrastructure beyond the buses. Like you were talking about, I think Spiro had said something about waiting in the sun, but they were asking questions about, well, maybe it's not just the buses. Maybe it is where you wait on the buses and the places you get in on that. So, but that'll be a conversation for the future. I want to go to this next one, and it's a conversation about money. Right, it's always a conversation about money. So would you support, as mayor, or oppose any move to remove the penny sales tax increase for the city of Mobile? So would you oppose it? Would you promote removing the penny sales tax or keep it where it is? Barbara, you are first.
I would not support it because that penny is now creating $65 million for the city coffers. One of the reasons the city now enjoys a AA stable rating from Moody's, in the Moody's Analytical, that penny is the reason we are so stable right now. I would not. That's why we can now recruit all the industry and we're seeing all the progress. That penny came along when there was a downturn in the economy and it has stabilized Mobile's future. And Moody has said that this is the reason why our future is so bright. That penny is creating opportunity for the city of Mobile.
All right. Connie.
The funding on for the 1 cent sales tax has been obligated. The revenue has been obligated for capital projects going forward. So it would not be feasible at this point to roll that back. You know, if you were to stop those capital projects sometime in the future, potentially. But I think the community has come to expect these projects in throughout the seven council districts in the city, and they've seen the benefits of what it has accomplished. And so, you know, if the community wanted to vote to roll it back, then, you know, I would respect the wishes of the community, but I think it has done a lot of good.
Spiro, you're next.
I don't think I would support it right now in our current economic position, but I think it could be a feasible reality in the future. When you look at the sales tax paid on internet goods, and that includes I order something from, let's say, Greer's, and online, go pick it up at Greer's, I'm going to pay a different sales tax than if I just walked in and picked everything out myself. That's happening at restaurants, retail shops. Our brick and mortar is, frankly, at a disadvantage based on our internet sales tax right now. If we can clarify that and get, you know, goods that are sold inside our city, whether online or in person, on a level playing field, I do think it could be possible. I would, you know, in the end, we got to make sure the dollars work or nothing else works. But it's something I would certainly look at if we can address that issue with SSUT and that internet sales tax.
All right, Paul.
I would simply say that I'm not a fan of taxes, period, but we have to pay them. I would be encouraged to audit the books and find out where the frivolous spending is. If we can get rid of it, my position would be to. Moody said we're stable, but the reality of it is that's because it's excess. And if it's excess, then there's room to trim. My position is simply this, is let's look at the books. Let's find out how we've overextended ourselves. There's a lot of things that we've committed to that could have been halfway paid for, such as the Civic Center, probably could have paid instead of $300 million, maybe half of that, if we would have developed and partnered with the private industry. I think there's a better way to do things. I'm not committed to getting rid of it right now, but I do believe that if we audit the books, look at it, do our due diligence, even if we can repeal it 5 or 10 years down the road, we certainly need to entertain it and relieve the burden off the community.
Paul, thank you. I tell you what happened here. So we're going to do an audible because the mention of the SSUT got me thinking about something. So we'll keep the same order for this one, for the question here. Would you, if you were mayor of Mobile, join this lawsuit that is Tuscaloosa, Mountain Brook, or this lawsuit over the distribution of the internet SSUT? Will you join on that and talk about what Mobile should get from it? So first up, Barbara.
Well, I was one of the individuals in the legislature that voted for the cities and the counties to get a share. Voted with the State Association for the county as well as for the Municipal Association. So, yes, I would.
All right. Connie, you're next.
I think as opposed to grappling over the way that it is distributed now, and I think Mr. Chirigatis hit on the problem here that it's not equal. You know, you can go to a brick and mortar and you're going to pay more than if you're ordering it online. I think it should be across the board if it's in the state. If it's 10% here in Mobile, then it should be 10% when you order it. And that way we can distribute that and everybody gets a bigger share of that pie.
All right, Spiro, well, back to you.
You know, it's distributed differently than our current sales tax, that brick and mortar sales tax. If you're living out in the county, you're paying more than you should be. If you're living in the city, you're not paying as much as you should be. I think we have to look at it. I can't say that I would join that lawsuit immediately. I think that kind of litigation, well, it's expensive, but it should be a last resort. I would continue to try and find ways to address it with the legislature, hopefully find legislative fixes to this so that we can, you know, who doesn't want to protect brick and mortar? It's hard to have a retail business these days with all the online sales. I think we can get our legislators to see the importance of protecting that brick and mortar.
Paul.
I think we should grapple over the money. It's nearly $1 billion a year to the state of Alabama. Mobile is arguably the second largest city in the state of Alabama, and I think that we need that money here. We don't have a problem taxing our citizens a 1 cent sales tax and make excuses why, you know, we don't get rid of the 1 cent sales tax, but we're not willing to go after the money that rightfully belongs. I guarantee you the state probably needs to do a study to find out how much of that money really is coming from Mobile County and find a way to equal that money based on population and certainly based on where the money is being spent. Brick and mortar is important, but the reality is with the future and with the way things are going, buying online merchandise is not going to change.
Right. Thank you, Paul. This one here, not far from where we're sitting right now. I guess it is on Monday that the first official Amtrak route will run between Mobile and New Orleans. Let's talk about that. If you were elected mayor, what would your
What would you push for funding? We have allocated it's about $3 million at this point for this Amtrak. If we get to the end of the 3 years and it's still not breaking even or losing money, would you support allocating additional dollars beyond the $3 million already pledged for Amtrak? First up here, Connie.
Well, I think there again, it's hypothetical. We have to look at what's happening in the next 3 years. We all hope that it's going to be successful. The intention is that it is. And I see a benefit, the connectivity between on the Gulf Coast, between the cities, that between New Orleans and Mobile. I think there's definitely advantages to having that. And unless there's a reason that it has that it's not producing at all, then I think we'll have to step back and look at our funding mechanism for that.
Yeah, I guess my question here, too, additionally, is like, well, how much, though? You know, if we get to that point, how much would we continue to contribute and for how long?
Well, I think it depends on what's coming out of the operation itself, you know, what's being produced, the fares and so forth. And that would depend on, that would go into the matrix of how much the city would have to be putting in to make it successful, to keep it operating.
Thank you. Barbara, you're next.
I am a proponent and happy that we have Amtrak. So I think that we need to evaluate them at the end of that period. But I think Mobile's future is so great. We're going to build a whole lifestyle change, and we're going to create an ecotourism market, and people are going to want to come here. And that is going to be a good vehicle to bring them here. So I think that we need to not only evaluate their contract in the future, but look at what impact it's making for the ridership of bringing people into Mobile and keeping people in Mobile.
Robert, thank you. Paul, you're next.
I like the Amtrak's here. I don't know that we set up the proper infrastructure for it. What I've seen so far is that, you know, the patrons that are going to ride it really don't have any overhead to protect them from inclement weather. So I think we're kind of setting ourselves up a little bit for failure. But saying that to say this is that, you know, we want it to be successful. I think it's a great program, but I can assure you if we commit any amount of money to it from the city taxpayer dollars, the problem we have in government is we don't do the follow-up. And the follow-up's important is what is the return on the investment if we give $3 million? What did we get out of that in way of ridership, whether it's fees or not, and what type of benefit did it bring to the economy, certainly in the city of Mobile?
Paul, thank you. Spiro.
You know, ticket sales are just one way to measure the impact of something like that. I'm excited about it. I heard just the other day the first three trains coming to our area are completely sold out. That's amazing. You know, you've got to look at how much time and money are the people spending after they get off of that train. How much time and money are they spending here in Mobile? You can look at increased hotel stays, increased money spent in our restaurants, our entertainment areas. In the end, if government is going to be efficient, it has to continuously be evaluating itself. We have to continually measure that economic impact, and we can do that with partners like the Chamber of Commerce, Visit Mobile. We can study the impact of that. I can't say that I'm willing to throw an endless amount of money at it to keep it, but if we can show that is, it might not be breaking even, but that it's bringing economic impact to our region, I would certainly be willing to supplement it in some way.
Thank you, Spiro. This question here, and then we got some listener questions coming up, but this one for me before we get into that. So if you don't win this election, so that's, we're speaking to three of y'all. If you don't win this election, what are you going to do next? What's next for you? Spiro, you're first.
I might be bagging groceries, but I don't know. You know, I don't really do backup plans. I like to focus on one goal and march towards it. I can't say I thought about it. I'll pray. You know, I will definitely sleep in one day, maybe three, but I'll pray about it, and I'll talk to my wife, and we'll find a way forward for our family.
All right, Paul.
Yeah, it's a great question. So for me, I'm fighting to win, and I think that we certainly have the momentum, and certainly nobody in this campaign is outworking me. And I don't say that to be pretentious. I really want the job. I really want to continue to serve Mobile. I'm relatively young and in good health, and I want to stay in the business, and there's no better way to do it as the mayor. If I'm not able to win the election for whatever reason, you know, I do see certainly a career in politics. And unlike the chief's job, you've got to be in a position where you can pull the strings and make things happen. But you also have to have the courage, and I think I'm the guy that has that.
Connie.
I would beg to differ with Mr. Prine. I think nobody in this campaign is outworking me. I know it for a fact. And I would say that, yeah, I absolutely love public service. And I'm running for mayor because I know I can make a difference. I know my experience matters. And I want to see Mobile thrive and be prosperous and improve the quality of life for everybody, including my grandchildren who are growing up here. But I will stay in public service just as long as I can, and I feel I can be a benefit to the community, and I can continue the projects that I'm working on that I know are beneficial. So that's the plan.
All right, Barbara.
I was a public servant when I walked into this campaign, and I'll be a public servant until the day that I leave this earth, because I believe in Mobile, I believe in her future, and I think that it is fine time for a female to lead the effort in the mayor's office, because that's when you're going to see all the backbone, because women can work.
Very good. Thank you. We'll get into some listener questions now. These are from people that live in Mobile, voters in Mobile. That have sent in their questions. First up, Adam says, do you think the city is or is not basically on track? And if or if not, excuse me, what is one major specific thing you would do or implement that's different from this current administration? First up, Paul.
Reduce crime. We can build all the buildings, build all the water parks, soccer fields, the aqua centers. All them things are great and they're fine. But if the reality of it is that people don't feel safe. You've heard me say it, Sean, many times. People want to be able to work, live, and play in their community. And right now, whether it's a reality to people or whether it's just perception, crime is a problem. And people want to, they want their kids to be safe. They want their grandkids to be safe. And unlike the current administration, I took it serious and I'll take it serious as the mayor.
All right. Next, Spiro.
You know, crime has been falling in many ways, but the truth is it's hard to see it if you turn on the news. I would certainly focus in to a different degree on gun violence specifically with our police department. I would certainly focus on public transportation in a new way that would be different. In general, I think our city is heading in a beautiful direction. I'm excited about the future for this city, but I do think there are issues that need to be addressed. I'm one of those people that think, you know, idle hands lead to trouble, and so I love the idea of reinvesting more money in positive programs for our kids, both after school and in the summer when they're out of school. I think we see the results of some reduced funding when you look at our gun violence around our city, so that's something I would take a hard look at increasing.
Very good. Barbara.
I think that I would look, as I said earlier, I would incentivize our neighborhoods, because crime is a problem in the city of Mobile, but it's a symptom of people not having an opportunity to those things that can better their lives. I'd incentivize the neighborhood to get rid of the blight, to give opportunities to our young people to be trained, because we are living in a time where we're seeing that an idle mind is a devil's workshop. And I would try to get some of the guns off of the street. Permitless carry has gotten so many guns on the street, and I would start retooling and rethinking our lifestyle here in Mobile.
And Connie.
Crime is certainly the number one issue and what we have to address immediately, and we can take steps to address crime. I think part of that is happening with our youth gun violence that we see almost every day on the news, that we need to build the number one juvenile crime division in the state of Alabama and address it, address gang activity that we see so much of, and really focus efforts in funding and priorities and manpower on working to address and reduce youth gun violence. I think that it's not mutually exclusive crime. I mean, while we're addressing that, we can't ignore everything else. We have to address the other issues, and that's what our citizens expect. You know, I keep hearing about sports facilities and what have you. Well, guess what? That is all part of the quality of life in this community, and they keep young people busy. We have to keep young people busy and keep them off the streets and engaged in positive activities that will help them, educational activities and sports and things like that, that will help young people move forward and be in better peer groups.
Thank you. And we've got a few minutes here before the news. Let me try to, we can get this one in because you mentioned the teen violence. So what could be done? So there are groups out in Mobile that are not police department, not city government. They're groups that are working to reduce teen violence. I happen to be part of one of them. Mm-hmm. I know it from the grassroots. Existing organizations out there, they're dealing with teen gun violence.
Yes.
What would you do if elected mayor to support them? What would you fund them? Would you give them a platform? What would you do for these NGOs to help them fight teen gun violence? And first, here is Barbara.
I would work with them, but now as far as funding, I would look at the viability, because everything doesn't need funds. Some things need people who care about those kids. I'm a volunteer of many. I think of one that I'm doing this summer with Dearborn, who is working with kids for the summer. I sent 50 kids to camp over there because I feel like that's what we need. We need to give opportunities. Every opportunity doesn't come along with a price tag. It comes along with people who actually care about young people, who will listen to them and give them a voice. If we put nothing into them, we get nothing out of them. It may cost some money, but we need to look at those programs that are making a difference, that's serving as the village.
You know, Paul's up next. Yes.
So I'll tell you this. We've been doing the same strategic plans for over the last 30 years. We never measured its success, but we know that crime is continuing to go up. My position is simply this, that just like we talked earlier, that the mayor has to lay out the vision of where you want to go with the city. I would partner with the city through subcommittees to be able to say, listen, here's our subculture of gun violence. We know that those committing most of the crime are between the ages of 15, 24. How do we work with the nonprofits? Government can't solve everybody's problems. Government can't be in the home. And we know when fathers are not in the home, we're going to continue to have a large part of these problems, especially morality problems where kids are killing kids. That's an issue. But the truth is we can certainly work with the school system and work with the nonprofits, and that is going to cost money. But if we're going to give money to nonprofits, I don't think we grade and measure our success. And what I would commit to is working with every nonprofit, and they don't like to work well together, bring them to the table, and then at the end of every year, if they do not spend the money wisely, if they cannot show us the success of their program, we call them out, we go with a different program.
Thank you. Paul, Connie, you're next.
Well, I think it's critical that we partner with organizations in the community that, like you mentioned, Sean, that you're a part of, that can help us. Government can't do it all. We can't solve all the problems alone, but we can work with faith-based community. We can work with nonprofits, groups that are committed, that are passionate about making a difference in the lives of young people. Boys and Girls Club, The Nest, and Project Inspire being another one. That's a great program that definitely needs to be expanded, and I think the city could be a big part of that. You know, this is a hospital-based nonviolence program for youth. They take referrals from Strickland Youth Center, but we could open that up and allow them to take referrals from the school system, from the churches. Wherever there are children who are that are at risk, that need to have a positive influence and mentorship in their lives. And so there are opportunities. We just need to hone those down and work with those organizations to make it happen.
Thank you. And to Spiro.
I certainly think there is room for increased funding to a lot of our programs. The first thing I want to do is it's not just nonprofits, it's also the faith community. And so often we have a lot of hands working on the same problem, but nobody knows what the other is doing. The truth is a lot of our kids who are most in need, they're kind of landlocked. They don't have transportation. If it's not within their neighborhood, they're going to have a hard time receiving the benefit of any of these programs. So again, I go back to public transportation, but I think we need to get our faith community and nonprofit community in the same room so everyone can understand what the other is doing. Some churches might have all the volunteers, but not that much of the money. Some churches might have plenty of money, but not enough volunteers. So we need to really connect our community, make sure that we are serving every child as best we can. I believe an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And so I do think there's some increased funding necessary, but I think we definitely have to evaluate the effectiveness of that funding in those programs.
Thank you, Spiro. And we're coming right back. More of our coverage from right here at the Convention Center, the Business Expo.
Preparing you for the August 26th mayoral vote. FM Talk 106.5 continues with the mayoral debates live from the Business Expo. Here with the candidates is Sean Sullivan.
And welcome back. Yes, at the Mobile Convention Center during the Chamber of Commerce's Business Expo, all four
hopefuls for the next mayor of Mobile here and talking with us. Listen to all the radio, of course. People asking, yes, this will post after we're finished here. This will post up on our podcast platforms, and we'll be able to share it that way as well. People are already asking that. Yes, it will be there. We'll just as soon as we can, we'll get it up and let it roll. All right, we continue here with a listener. These are listeners that have emailed in over the last couple weeks with questions for y'all. So let's get back to this one. The first one was from Adam. This is from James, lives in Mobile, and he has, now this is going to be a three-parter, so I may ask one at a time here. So from James, we'll ask the first question, we'll go through, we'll keep the same order and ask the second question and the third. He said, I would like to know from each candidate for mayor the following questions. Number one, how do you propose to stop the frequent sewage overflows into the city's stormwater drainage system? If we stay with the same here, let's go Spiro first.
We have to take a hard look at our drainage system. I've toured a lot of our ditches that are really the backbone of our stormwater runoff system. It continually gets overwhelmed. You know, we're the rainiest city in the country by rainfall. We've got a lot of ditches that are operating at 20% and 30% capacity because they haven't been cleaned out in 8, 9, 10 years. We have to get to work on this yesterday. I saw some pictures of Mobile after Katrina the other day, and it was well underwater. It keeps me up at night thinking about that large rain event. If we don't get on this problem right now, there's no telling the amount of devastation we could suffer. So that's a day one issue for me, is getting to our ditches, cleaning them out, getting us back up to capacity.
All right, thank you, Paul.
Yeah, it's a great question. I agree that the ditches need to be cleaned up, but this is a problem that goes back to the previous administration where we put 10-year flood pipes in versus 100-year flood pipes, more than likely, you know, wanting to kind of save and conserve money. The reality is we probably need even a pumping system at some point on different places, being strategic about it, but we've got to audit where our problems are, and then we got to figure out how we're going to fix it. And we could talk about pipes, we could talk about pumping stations, and certainly cleaning the ditches. But until you do a complete audit, you know, we're all just second guessing what's going to happen to be able to fix it.
All right, thank you, Paul. Connie, you are next.
Well, that complete audit is underway right now. The city is undergoing a mapping system for all 44,000 inlets, culverts, and outfalls within the city, and that will pinpoint areas where there's points of failure and public safety hazards, and those are the areas that would have to be addressed first, the priority areas. And so I think that it's coming up with a plan to address those first and then moving on throughout the system. It's going to require repair work in some areas. It's going to have to clear obstruction in some areas and then replacement in some areas. But the priorities would come first.
Right. Thank you, Barbara.
Well, I think that we would have to also, in addition to looking at the laterals that are within the city of Mobile, we've got to work, and there's a partnership right now with the Mobile Area Water and Sewer Board. I think that is important because now it used to be that they just did their own work. Now they're partnering with the city. When you see the major infrastructure projects, they're going in and they're redoing all of the piping and all of the inlets into those areas now. So I think that partnerships need to be broadened a little bit more, and more money need to be put into it. But I think we also need to look at a master plan, because this is something that has been plaguing us for far too long.
That's for sure. All right, we're going to stick with this. It's still the questions from James. Second one here. We'll stay in the same order, too. Are you in favor of allowing Alabama Power to continue to leave waste material from Berry Steam Plant near the Mobile River's edge, or do you favor having it removed? And first up, Spiro.
I certainly favor it being removed. I'm thankful that it's now becoming economically feasible for them to recycle some of that material and use it for construction when it costs less, when you can put money back into solving that issue. I think it's going to happen a little faster for Alabama Power. I do like, currently their plan is to back that wastewater, pump it all out, but back that wastewater pond about 100 yards off of the river in some areas, 300. Again, storms, you know, until that is either capped or removed, a large storm event could put that wastewater directly into our river system. It would be devastating. I will continue to work with Alabama Power and encourage them to do the right thing and protect our river.
Paul.
Absolutely. I don't think it ever should have been put there, but I wasn't the mayor at the time. The reality of it is I think Alabama Power has already committed to a plan to remove it, and that the city's responsibility is to work with Alabama Power, build that consensus to make sure they're doing it in a way that it doesn't create further pollution, especially into the runoff into the river. And I think that's a very simple fix, but I'm for moving it.
All right, Connie.
Well, there are 21 million tons of that coal ash in the unlined ponds right now, and I absolutely agree it should be excavated and moved. It's a hazard. It's a risk to the underground water table and to the health and vitality of the community overall, and also the marine life. So, yes, it should be moved, but I think it's going to require a lot of collaboration working together with Alabama Power and our federal authorities and to make sure that this happens. And the city's role certainly is to be a part of that and to also monitor what's happening and how long it's taking.
Barbara?
I think that all of those options are good. I think that's what we need to look at, all options. Besides having it removed, also look at any recycling opportunities, because in some places coal ash is being used to develop concrete and other things. So I think that we need to look at all options, because when you look at the issue, there's a delicate balance when you're talking about business plus the environment. But we ought to bring all of the players to the table and partner, because we want the very best for Mobile. But I think we need to look at all options. Even EPA has now told Alabama Power Company you can bury some of it. You don't have to line it. So I think that we need to come to the table and look at all options that is best for both of those entities, because we can have a meeting of the mind as well.
All right. And this one, a theme here on the environment. What is your, and this kind of probably not surprising you, this question is going to come up. What is your position concerning the Corps of Engineers mud dumping of dredge material from the Mobile Ship Channel? First up here, Paul.
Right. So I think it takes real leadership to have engaged in that process long before the Corps engineers started. I think that with what they're doing, whether it's with the oyster beds and the ecosystem out there in the river, there are other things that we can do other than just kind of redumping off to the side some of that soot that's out there. You know, we could do shoreline restoration, work with, nonprofits like Baykeeper that have the best management practices in the industry. But what we're doing, in my opinion, is completely unacceptable. I understand it's got to get done, right, because it's a part of the economy, it's a part of the growth with the port, but the reality of it is leadership should have been engaged in that long before we got to where we are now.
Spiro.
I'm excited that this has become a big issue. I'm excited that we're paying attention, because Mobile Bay is our greatest natural resource as a city. As a scientist, I spoke with one of the scientists in charge of the seagrass restoration in our area. And, you know, scientists rely on data, and we don't have a lot of data points right now to say what the effect of that increased turbidity is doing to our environment. But you can't ignore the anecdotal effects. You can't ignore the fishermen who are having smaller catches. You can't ignore the oysters that are dying where they never have before. We're going to have to maintain that dredge channel for the rest of time as long as we want that 50 foot. We've got to make sure that maintenance dredging is going to beneficial use, whether that's upper marsh islands, whether that's habitat restoration or even creation for wetland areas. We have to make sure that we're not, just because this practice is accepted in other bays, doesn't mean it's right for ours.
All right. Thank you. Barbara, you are next.
I think that we need to bring all of those partners to the table with the Corps of Engineers, because, part of our existence in this part of the state is our eco life. And we need to make sure that we protect it. But we also want that port to be deepened, because we're going to surpass Houston. But that's why I think it's so important to work with Mobile Bay Keepers and other organizations, because I think that got off to the wrong foot. I don't think Bay Keepers was looking to take it over, but they wanted to know what the process, because they're looking out for the welfare of this community. So if we can bring all of the players to the table, communications can help.
Thank you, Connie.
And I agree with that. We need to work together to figure out an acceptable solution. The thin layer placement that's currently being used to deposit the dredge material is one of the less expensive options. And I think there are other options, other alternatives, and certainly that we've seen and happening in other states that have less negative impact on the oyster beds and other marine life. And I think it's a matter of getting the attention of EPA EPA, working through our federal legislators and our Corps of Engineers, and making sure that we have the advocacy moving forward to have the money, to demand the money that's necessary for another option that doesn't have hazardous effects on our community and the marine life and our fishing and oystering industries.
Thank you very much. This next one from Freddie in West Mobile. He throws in District 6, so he's doubling up here. Freddie says, do you intend to complete Mayor Stimson's projects, especially Brooklee by the Bay? And if not, why? Barbara, you're first.
Well, I want to look at the dollars, and again, I've already asked to meet with and get those dollars amount, but I like the project. I had an opportunity to sit down with Philip Burton, who told me about his project that is on Brooklee that will complement that project. I think that anytime we can give more access to the water for citizens, I think it's a good thing, so I'm certainly willing to look at it.
All right, Paul, you're next.
I like the whole concept of Brooklee by the Bay. I've not seen all the detailed work of the project. I'd like to see the kind of money that we've already spent, the projected money that we need to spend, but also agree that giving access to the water is a must, certainly for the community, and we don't have a lot of that in Mobile, but I would certainly take a hard look, find out how we can even make it better.
All right, Connie.
I think it's an exciting project. It will give that accessibility to the waterfront that people have long asked for and wanted to see, and as an entertainment and recreational area. I think we have to look back at the dollars and cents. A lot of money has been obligated by the current administration, the Civic Center, Arena project certainly, and other projects that are ongoing. Those we will complete. You know, they are contractually obligated, and so when I'm mayor, I'm the number one cheerleader for those projects because we've invested heavily. They have to be successful. I will make them do everything in my power to make sure that they are. These other projects that are in the queue right now, we've got to look and see what the overall cost. You know, the cost of projects are going up every day. Every single day that goes by, costs continue to rise. So, but I understand the importance of the community, and I will look into it and do everything I can to bring it to fruition.
Thank you, Connie. This is the last of the listener questions, and we're also going to... Oh, I'm sorry, Spiro, yes. Yeah, I'm so excited about this last question. Spiro, go ahead. We'll get to this one. You answered this one on the project, Brooklee by the Bay. Would you finish it?
Are you tired of listening to me?
No, I'm just so excited about this next question. This is the best listener question. Y'all get ready,
yeah,
but yes.
I think I know that, Freddie, but the answer is yes. You know, I was at Brooklee by the Bay yesterday. We don't have to spend a lot of money to make that property amazing. I think Brooklee by the Bay is going to be the crown jewel of Mobile's park system, and I think it's okay to do some projects in stages. We don't have to spend all, I think, an estimated $24 million to do everything out there that we wanted to do at one time. I can tell you right now, with some minimal infrastructure investment, some walking trails, biking trails, a parking pad, and a lot of grass mowing, Brooklee by the Bay would be amazing tomorrow. So getting that open for the citizens to enjoy that access to the water immediately, that's something.
So you're saying to open it up, even if everything's not finished, go ahead and get it opened up.
Yeah, let's get it open. We need people. It is gorgeous out there. I walked that beach yesterday. We got some cleanup to do out there. We don't have to do it all at one time. We can stage this, and we can open that beautiful piece of property to the public without doing the full investment at one time.
All right. Thank you. And, this is the one that got me to jump so quickly. And all the listener questions, they all did not make it to the sheet I'm holding in my hand right now. But this one from Laurel in Mobile. She said, shortly after the election, are you, and because this is the most city-oriented question, shortly after the election, are you and your volunteers going to take down all the signs that are on the right-of-ways and scattered around the city? That is from Laurel in Mobile. So first up, we'll just inverse. Spiro, you go first.
Well, I hope you won't find many of my signs on the right-of-way. They're not supposed to be there, so I try not to.
Our phones ring, our text lines go, when people say there's signs here, there's signs there, and they're good with it, but they say, hey, after elections, not y'all's, but after there's election, these signs keep sitting there.
So can we get a Laurel saying, will you and your volunteers take down all the signs that are in the right-of-way or scattered around the city?
Absolutely. You know, when it comes to the big signs, they'll be down. Any random right-of-way signs, we'll get them down immediately. But if all my friends want to keep those signs in their yard for a little while, I'm not going to be mad at them.
Very good. Connie.
Yes. I've always made sure that my signs were down. I respect people. I don't want to litter. You know, having these signs out are part of the campaigning, and people are patient with that. But after the election, they want them gone, and I want them gone, too.
All right, Paul.
Absolutely, and I'm going to go one step further, that within 7 days, every one of my signs, the big signs, certainly the ones on the right-of-way, will be taken down. I've already got five volunteers with five trailers ready to roll when this thing's over, when I win the entire election in the general election on August 26th.
All right, Barbara.
I certainly will. It's really funny because some people are taking mine down now. But I will take them down, but it's going to be wonderful. You're going to want my sign because you're going to see that this is a historic moment. You're going to want my signature on that sign, so bring it to me.
Very good. Laurel, see, we got your question asked there. Yeah, but I just said, you know, out of all the ones who were emailed in, that was the one that got my attention because that's the kind of stuff we hear about doing what I do for a living. All right, so let's do this for closing remarks here, and we'll just do the reverse. We opened up with the order of the candidate getting in the race and chronologically. So we will back that out and start off with the last going to the first person in the race. So, Barbara Drummond, you are first for closing statements.
Again, I want to thank you, Sean, for this great opportunity. And those of you that are listening, I want you to know that this is Representative Barbara Drummond, a native of Mobile, someone who loves this city and sees nothing but bright future. So on August the 26th, when you get ready to pull that lever, look at somebody who has experience not only in county government, city government, and now in state government, and have those federal relationships. She can take this city to the next level. On day one, she will know what door to knock on and what things to do. Our city is great. I am so happy to be in this race. So on August the 26th, go out to the polls and pull the lever for Representative Barbara Drummond.
Thank you, Paul Pine.
Listen, experience really does matter. My resume speaks for itself. My experience has already been in the community for the last 27 years. What is most important in the leader? We've all given you ideas of what our responses are going to be, but the truth is, how do you know what we're going to do? Are you going to have buyer's remorse in 4 years? The reality of it is it cost me something with the current administration to do the right thing, even when it cost me an early retirement. That's the man that you're going to get. I'm not going to give you a story that's going to twist and manipulate truth to make myself look good. I'm a real servant leader. I'm not going to tell you that I reduced crime or did something else that I had absolutely nothing to do with. I'm certainly not going to tell you that I'm going to revitalize the neighborhood that I live in when I've been in some form of office and could have done it for the last 20 years. Paul Prine is a man that means what he says. He says what he means. He can't be bought. He certainly can't be intimidated. And if I'll do the right thing by myself and it costs me something publicly, you can rest assured Paul Prine will do it for you. Paul Prine for mayor.
Hey, thank you. And Spiro Cherry got us.
Mobile's a big city, and big cities are going to have issues. They always will, and I'm all in on finding solutions to every one of them. But we cannot, I hope, we will not lose sight of all the reasons we have to be optimistic in our city. You know, I'm looking forward to reorganizing the city's efforts to combat gun violence, but I'm also looking forward to spending an afternoon with my family at Brookley by the Bay. You know, I'm looking forward to fighting blight in our community. I'm also looking forward to taking that first flight out of Brookley International Airport. I'm looking forward to fixing our traffic issues with tools like AI, but I'm also looking forward to the fact that the train's here. We have year-round cruises again. When it comes to the city of Mobile, I'm looking forward to what's next for our city because I believe the future of Mobile is bright. I am all in when it comes to finding and helping Mobile reach that full potential and realizing that bright future. On August 26th, I'm asking you to join me. I'm asking you to trust me with your vote. I'm asking you to go all in with me.
Thank you. And Connie Hudson.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a pivotal time for the future of our city. This election will affect the next generation and beyond, and it boils down to leadership. My style of leadership is one that sets high standards, that demands accountability, that trust and appreciates the ability of people to come together and work together and to collaborate. It's one, my style of leadership is one that can get things done. I have a history. I have a proven record of getting things done, and it's by working with others. And so I am the only candidate in this race who has served in local government, both city and county, who's been an elected official, and I have been for 24 years. I have the experience with budgets. I'm the only candidate in this race who has worked on major capital projects, hundreds of million dollars in capital projects, and brought them from concept to fruition. And so I offer that experience. I offer that ability to work with others. I can roll up my sleeves and get to work on day one, August 26th. Please vote for Connie Hudson for mayor of Mobile.
Thank you to all the candidates for being here today and talking with us, and big thank you to the Mobile Chamber of Commerce for putting on the Business Expo and having us as part of it. This discussion, if you've just caught part of it or you want to share it with friends, will be up on our podcast pages as soon as possible, and you can share it out there. Once again, this has been a conversation with one person who will be our next mayor in just under 2 weeks' time on FM Talk 106.5.
The Mobile Mayor Vote is August 26th. Support your candidate. Support your community. Vote to support Mobile. For more information on this election, visit cityofmobile.org. And thank you for listening to this mayoral debate. Turning up your voice. FM Talk 106.5.